Image after imago. As a dyslexic person, I often turn to etymology to help me figure things out. Finding that words can be unravelled and their parts traced back through time has led to no end of joyful and creative misunderstandings and discoveries. Strange traces seem to appear between things as a word is picked apart. Proto-forms and senses are revealed under the layers, and in the shifting spellings and arrangements of letters, surprising connections are made. Unfortunately, this doesn't really help me in Scrabble.
Image 1. Annotations on an envelope holding two snake x-rays. Museum of Zoology at University of Michigan. An A4 envelope, bright saffron in colour, used for the keeping and filing of x-rays. It looks official rather than personal. And at the bottom there is printed, Cone Instruments in all capitals. In the top left-hand corner, there are also printed headings for filling in by the x-ray operator. Name, number, date, doctor, and remarks. For number, there is handwritten 2244B. For remarks, there is written RMNH Jazz 233. The rest of the headings aren't filled in. In the centre towards the bottom of the envelope, there are two ballpoint pen drawings of the x-rayed snakes next to each other. Each drawing consists of a single line with an arrow on one end. The one on the left is a wiggly line that moves left to right with the arrow at the bottom. This one is labelled 18696206V. The drawing on the right is a spiral, with the arrow at the centre, and is labelled 240-3299V. The spiral drawing also has an annotation, gut contains snail shell.
Finding an empty snail shell in the garden, I thought of the entomological etymologies of imago and image. Imago is a term that describes, of an insect, the stage at which it becomes sexually mature, a final form in the biological life cycle that leaves behind images of itself through trace, carapace, and cocoon. The imago stage is so called because it represents a kind of true image of the insect, the definitive version that casts off the mask of its previous representations. The fresh cicada, having emerged from its image, is considered an imago, the iconic version. But when is an insect really in imago, and for how long? Is imago a moment caught, passed by on the way to a different state? The moment imago begins for the snail is less clearly defined. There is no obvious eruption or shredding that occurs. Rather, a steady calcification of layers and gradual increase in size. Perhaps this is why the term is only applied to insects. Both image and imago can be traced from the Latin imitari, to copy or imitate, and further back to the Proto-Indo-European root word, aim.
Image 2. Back of a Model of a Daisy by Dr. Azu, circa 1880. Museum of Applied Arts and Sciences, Sydney. A large, realistic papier-mâché model of a daisy, photographed against a light grey background. The daisy itself has been flipped upside down. The white petals are facing the ground, their wheel-like arrangement taking up most of the image. In the centre, connected to the petals, is the daisy's light green stem. It has a small brass hook and eyelet closure, as the stem can be opened up to see the plant's vascular system inside. In this image, it remains closed, but the function of the model is revealed by the little clasp and the vertical split in the stem where the two parts of it meet. Image 3. Two grass edges. London, 2019. A patch of grass takes up most of the frame. A black metal fence with vertical railings cuts across the top left-hand corner. The patch of grass is made up of two distinct areas and types of grass, split in an arc from the railing in the top left to the bottom right. The difference between them is stark. The grass at the bottom is newly planted, sparse enough to see dry dirt between some of the blades. The grass at the top is lusher and thicker, and it is dotted with dandelions and clusters of daisies.
Perhaps imago is a symbolic form of the insect, the stage when it is most readily imagined and represented. How might images form after imago, in varying stages of hardening and softening, evidencing duration? What is the true image of the snail? If it is too difficult to ascertain the moment when a snail is considered sexually mature, is the imago of the snail a classic picture of a fully grown adult snail? Is it a symbolic representation of a spiral shell, with its foot and antennae out, as in the portrait of the snail that hibernated in the British Museum for nearly 4 years? Or perhaps it's a snail's shell that sits mysteriously, whose occupation or vacancy is unsure. If the snail is the imago, the shell is perhaps an afterimage, an image after imago, trace evidence of the once living being that grew it. I think this interest in etymology has something to do with the idea of research, and how found images, citations, and other texts can become part of a project. In Snail Time, and across other collaborative exchanges with Lucy Mail since 2014, the presence of research within the installation has been a common thread. This is usually as a series of ephemera, pages or documents to be taken away or read within the installation. Sometimes this research is a sound work or a projected image. Usually it's compiled into a publication alongside other texts. I think we both feel that the way in which images and texts sit in relation to each other is important in our work, and that the goal is a kind of montage of meanings. Montage rather than collage, because a collage is a single image made up of other images, whereas a montage is a series of images that fold and unfold over duration, frames that flow meanings together. With each new secreted layer of shell, the snail builds up an archive of image traces. Do the lines between the segments represent a cut, as in film? If so, then it is a cutting together or a stitching. Montage, like archive and writing in general, promises a surplus value that there may be more and other meanings to what it says at the literal level.
Image 4. Field, sparrow nest and eggs seen through a mirror held on a pole. By Benjamin J. Galt, 1912. A black and white photograph of a bird's nest in a tree. In the close foreground is the side view of an out-of-focused bird's nest, to us really just a jumble of leaves and twigs. Behind this jumble, suspended on a pole, is a small rectangular mirror with rounded wooden edges. The mirror is angled perfectly, so that reflected in it we can see three tiny speckled eggs lying at the centre of the nest. Sunlight is coming in from behind the mirror, catching the edges of the twigs and leaves, and making the eggs seem almost to glow gently. Image 5. Objects through museum magnifying glasses at Villa Giulia, Rome, 2019. There are two circular, domed, frameless magnifying lenses. One lens is at the centre of the image, and the other occupies the bottom right-hand corner. The lenses seem suspended over small circular mirrors, up from which jut delicate perspex poles onto which small objects are affixed. The objects are numbered 2 and 3, pointing towards a caption or historical information on the museum wall, perhaps. The domed lenses both reflect the room where they are located in their curved surfaces, the edges of the museum vitrine, and some kind of gridded skylight above. It is through the central lens that we can see several tiny oval-shaped carved cameo stones that are magnified through it. One is a deep brown, and the other is white with a brown centre. We can't discern what is carved on them, but we get a sense of peering down through layers of museological glass to try and make out some detail on these small objects.
And what is the imago of an installation? Well, in its most basic life cycle, the installation is established, open to the public, and deinstalled. When opened, it reaches imago. Photographs are taken and uploaded to websites. People are invited for reviewing. The main images of the installation are made to represent the work in the future. But this fails to account for other stages, the research and planning that happens before access is given to a space, the initial realizations of difference between drawings and reality, the subtle and not-so-subtle material transformations that occur over its duration, the written responses made after the work is taken down. What traces those materials back to the installation after it disappears? How do they share a history as they are dispersed across archive boxes and in friends' houses and gardens? Between these stages are a series of faster life cycles that might contain their own imagos. The open and closed periods of the gallery or site, private viewings and public open hours, lunch breaks, back in five, the time it takes to turn the work on and off, troubleshooting, problems and mends, the change of light over the course of a day, and perhaps over several weeks passing between the seasons. Are these not all valid candidates for imago? Imago is the image, the perfect icon, and the aim of all mutations and transformations. For an installation, its documentation cements a point in time as the image, or images, puncturing other durations and experiences. Yet the documentation image is also an imitation of the installation, aim. The fictions of the camera remake the installation into an image. How then can an installation be more like the snail's shell, always image after imago? Can an installation cast off the mask of its previous representations?
Image 6. Cyanotype of lace pattern from A Handbook for Greek and Roman Lace Making, printed by R. Barrett and Sons, 1869. A page from an old book with yellowing pages, in portrait orientation. Cutting diagonally from the top right-hand corner to the bottom left is a bright blue triangle, a cyanotype of a lace pattern. The blue is the negative space of the lace, with the threads of the lace represented by white lines. The pattern is made up of boxes and wheel shapes, interlocking on a tentatively drawn background grid. The effect of the image as a silhouette is somewhat ghostly, the lace present only through the absence of colour against the blue. Along the diagonal edge, the drawing is annotated with the words, Greek lace from Corfu. Image 7. Curtain holding windows pattern, Rome, 2019. Inside a dark room in a museum, looking towards a very brightly lit window in the centre of the image. The light bleeds in at the edges of the window, but we can see almost nothing inside the room aside from the window itself. In front of the window hangs a curtain made from a single panel of cream-coloured linen fabric, cut perfectly to size, and weighed down at the bottom edge so it hangs straight. The full sunshine coming through the window has transferred both the square grid of the window's small glass panels and the repeating diamond pattern of the shutter beyond it onto this curtain. It's like the sunlight is pushing the pattern through and onto the curtain, just shadowed lines showing the window's structure.
Collecting this research is often the first step towards our working together, something to share back and forth and then respond to. Images and texts operating as materials in the work. Through making, the research unravels, and connective tissues of meaning form across the project at hand. As the project continues, and in each iteration, research becomes a research as we go over similar ground and return to ideas. The word research, from the old French word rechercheur, can be split into two actions. The first is re, which itself has two senses. Re means back, to move backwards or to return to a place, and also again, to repeat, to undo, turn over, renew. The origin of re is uncertain, but possibly comes from the Indo-European ret, to turn. The second action is searcha, to seek for, implying a forwards orientation and direction of looking. The word searcha can be traced further back to the Latin circare, which means to go about, wander, traverse, and in turn from circus, see circle. Research as walking, circling back, looking forwards and backwards.
Image 8. Leaves at Palazzo Altompe, Rome, 2019. A museum display of carved marble leaves and foliage, most of them only partial or partially finished. Three uneven rows of these objects lie densely packed on a light purplish-grey fabric. They are close together but not touching. Most of the large foliage on the left-hand side are made from white marble. On the right-hand side, there are some smaller leaves and fragments made from blue and orange marble. Each piece has been carved with lines to suggest the leaf's structure. A few have ink or pigment rubbed into these incisions, so as to make this detail clearer. The edges of the objects are irregular, serrated, wiggly. They look like pieces in a puzzle, but you can't tell where they really belong. You get the sense that these leaves are a collection from many places, or like remnants, leftovers, or tests.